And good morning and welcome to our Focus 580 for today here on WILL AM 580 and WILL.illinois.edu. I'm Jay Pierce, sitting in for David Engin this hour, and Suzanne Truppen, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Illinois College of Medicine and obstetrician-gynecologist at the Women's Health Practice in Champaign, is scheduled to be here, and I'm told she is on her way. So we will, in a few moments, be taking your phone calls on women's health as Dr. Truppen makes one of her regular visits to take your calls. And in the meantime, let me update you on what's coming up later this week on Focus. As David's under the weather, we'll probably not count on him being here tomorrow, but on Wednesday, hopefully, he'll be back and be talking with Jonathan Simon, Associate Dean in the Jurisprudence and Social Policy Program and Professor of Law at University of California, Berkeley, about Simon's book, Governing Through Crime, How the War on Crime Transformed American Democracy and Created a Culture of Fear. That's the first hour Wednesday. Second hour of the program, How Rural Communities Respond to Environmental Change and Risks. And Courtney Flint, Professor of the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at University of Illinois, will be David's guest. Thursday morning in the 10 o'clock hour, Peter Heller, award-winning adventure writer and NPR commentator, is scheduled to be on talking about his book, The Whale Warriors, The Battle at the Bottom of the World to Save the Planet's Largest Mammals. And in the 11 o'clock hour, waterboarding, torture techniques, information, and the Geneva Convention. David's guest is to be Malcolm W. Nance, director of the Special Readiness Services International, a Washington, D.C.-based anti-terrorism, counter-terrorism consultancy supporting the intelligence community. On Friday morning, Deception, Pakistan, the United States, and the Secret Trade in Nuclear Weapons. Catherine Scott Clark, award-winning investigative journalist and senior correspondent with The Guardian and co-author of that book. And then in the 11 o'clock hour Friday morning, David's guest is to be Scott Borg, who's director of director and the chief economist of the U.S. Cyber Consequences Unit and senior research fellow in international security studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Cybersecurity for national security is the topic. That's rounding out the week Friday morning in the second hour of Focus 580. Coming up this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine, as long as we're talking about schedules, very timely program, State House Struggles is what we're titling it. Governor Blagojevich in the 95th Illinois General Assembly. And Celeste Quinn's guests will be Cynthia Canary, who is the executive director of the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform and commentator and political analyst and lecturer. And also Jim Nolan, who's a senior fellow with the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs and also an adjunct professor of public policy at Knox College and director of research with the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. Jim Nolan and Cynthia Canary scheduled to be on the Afternoon Magazine today. And, of course, your phone calls will be welcome, as the topic will be the struggles at the Illinois Capitol, Governor Blagojevich's struggles with the 95th Illinois General Assembly. And again, coming up in this hour, Suzanne Truppen is scheduled to be by to talk about women's health issues here in this hour of Focus 580. We're told by her office that she is indeed on the way to the studio. So if Jason will help us take a little break, and we'll play just a couple of minutes of music while we make sure that Susan is arriving and get her in the studio. We hope to begin the program in a moment.
Thank you.
And this is the Focus 580, second hour of the Focus program. I'm Jay Pierce, sitting in for David Inge. And Suzanne Troopman is here with us now, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at U of I College of Medicine and an obstetrician gynecologist at Women's Health Practice in Champaign. And we'll review some of the current issues in women's health and also take your phone calls at 333-9455. If you'd like to get on the line right now, 333-9455 is our local number. And long distance, toll free, 222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Dr. Troopman, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Kind of busy after Thanksgiving here. I suppose a lot of people are probably worried more about losing the extra weight they gained over Thanksgiving and knew they shouldn't have. But there are other issues to talk about.
Absolutely. And we don't talk so much about weight anymore. We used to talk about BMI, which is basal metabolic index, which is your height per weight. And we don't even talk about that as much as what is your waist?
What is your waist?
Because it is the weight we accumulate around our waist, particularly as we get older, that is the problem. And women, generally speaking, should have a waist under 35 inches. And if you are South Pacific, some South Asian extraction, actually, that number should be under 32. So we actually gauge it based on your background as well as just the fact that you're female. So we're finally in medicine getting a little bit more technical than male-female. We're advancing.
And is that relative to height at all, or is that just absolute no matter how tall you are?
It's pretty much absolute within the general ranges. But you're right that it should vary a little bit based on your height, but 35 is still fairly generous.
Yeah.
And it definitely correlates with cardiovascular risk. And then if we tag that in with other factors of cardiovascular risk, like what your triglyceride level is, so not no more just what's your cholesterol number, mm-hmm. but what's your triglyceride, what's your HDL?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only the good cholesterol, but that good cholesterol that we can get up by exercising. What is your blood pressure number? And we put all these factors together. Blood sugar. American Diabetes Association used to say your fasting should be under 110. Guess what? No good anymore. Mm. Now it's got to be under 100. So all you have to do is live a little bit longer and you get less healthy.
That's right.
Because we redefine everything.
We never knew we were so close to death most of our lives.
Well.
Well, anyway, triglycerides is a number that has come up more and more of late. And I don't think that I had even heard of triglycerides 5-10 years ago.
Well, triglycerides as one of the blood fats is more of a risk factor in women than in men.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're right. It was one of those things that was basically being ignored. And now we realize that it's not just good enough to pull your cholesterol in line, but we want to pull that triglyceride number in line. And for women, as they go through menopause and that triglyceride number goes up, that's an issue as women get on estrogen hormone and their triglyceride number goes up. That may be an issue. Younger women, their triglyceride may be altered by contraception. So particularly as we've gotten safer with respect to blood clots and some other factors with contraception, we've changed the way the hormones are layered out within the contraceptive pills. We don't know if that's going to be a heart benefit or a heart negative because the balance of cholesterols may change.
Mm-hmm. We're not just talking about prolonging life necessarily. It's the quality of life as long as you are alive. And that's why we worry about all of these factors now.
This is true.
There you go. All right. If you have a question about women's health, 333-9455, and you can talk to Dr. Troopman, or 800-222-9455. What are some of the items, the current issues that you have on your mind today?
Well, I thought that I would talk a little bit about osteoporosis. I know a lot of listeners talk a lot about osteoporosis, and we talk a lot about the bisphosphonates of women with a diagnosis of either osteopenia, which is low bone mass, or osteoporosis. About 85% are taking some form of bisphosphonate. And when bisphosphonates like Fosamax and Actonel, which is the alendronate and resendronate are their generic names, but most people know them by their brand names. When they first came out, they were daily pills, and then they were released in a once-a-week formulation. And in part, we released those types of formulation, we meaning the medical community, because those medicines were somewhat tough to take. They didn't absorb very well if you took them with food in your stomach. And if you had any reflux at all, they could cause a little bit of what we call esophagitis. Most of us call it heartburn. And so you had to take these medications first thing in the morning on an empty stomach with a full glass of water and not eat or lay back down for about 30 minutes. So the problems of the heartburn were solved for some people, not everybody. As we went with the once a week formulations, because what would happen is we'd get 7 days for that, a little bit of irritation of the esophagus to heal. But it was still somewhat of an issue and fussy. So I was working with the compound Beneva, which I know Sally Fields has been doing commercials. So as soon as I say Beneva, people look at me with a scrunched forehead. And then I say Sally Fields commercial, and my patients all look up, oh, I know that one. And so they've reformulated it for a once-a-month dosing, and it's actually an excellent compound. You can actually take it intravenously 4 times a year, although that's a little bit fussy. And now we have just had the approval of Reclast, again, a bisphosphonate, and it has been approved as treatment of postmenopausal osteoporosis, and you take it intravenously, so you do have to get hooked up to an IV, and it is a once-a-year infusion. So 15-minute infusion, and you are done for the year. And they've done a little bit of comparison studies with some of the other formulations, and it is so amazing how well this compound performs, because if you skip a dose at all, or you accidentally, like instead of your water, you sneak some coffee in there with your dose, the amount of absorption is so radically decreased that the compliance piece is completely taken out of it, and patients do so much better. So it's been very, very exciting. And now for our patients that don't want to deal with an IV and maybe don't feel comfortable with once a year dosing, because it's a very new kind of concept. We are now newly starting to enroll a research trial that will be reformulating the Actonel medication to see if we can get some a formula that would allow patients to be able to eat at the same time. So we're actually recruiting patients that are greater than 5 years from menopause and who have actual osteoporosis or osteoporotic fractures, which most people don't know they have. We can discuss that in a moment if we wanted to take our call first. But we're very excited about this new study, and we think that it's going to involve a compound that will allow for more patients to be prospectively treated, because we are getting more and more of us that are living well into our 80s and 90s, and there are well over 50,000 American women that are over the age of 100, and we need to keep those bones strong for a long time.
Absolutely. Let's go to the call, but first I wanted to ask, with the IV procedure, the 15 minutes, is that in the doctor's office? That's not an inpatient thing.
in my office, it would be in a doctor's office. Mm-hmm. In some offices, they might have to refer you to an infusion center. But yes, absolutely. It should be something that should be able to be available in every doctor's mm-hmm. office.
Okay. Well, let's take a call on line one in Urbana. Go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, hi. It's about Fosamax and the other drugs like it. About a year ago, there was a problem with necrosis of the jaw, and that was sort of settled, I think. But in this month's AARP bulletin, there was a little article this month, 1107, saying that the latest study didn't reveal any safety issues for reclass, which was approved by the FDA in August, but the FDA plans to review reclass and other osteoporosis drugs, including Actonel, Beneva, and Fosamax, for possible links to irregular heartbeat. Reclass costs about $1,000 a dose. Well, I got online and went through a whole lot of articles from medical journals and lawyers' offices and other sources, newspapers and so on, saying that there is a concern that there is atrial fibrillation. I guess that would be the irregular heartbeat. And it's just like going through it all over again. What's going on?
Okay, let me say that with osteonecrosis of the jaw, it's extremely rare, and I've actually never seen a case clinically. So, and I see patients all day long that have taken or are taking these medications. Dentists often will see these cases, so you may have pockets of a particular dentist or somebody who thinks they've seen these cases. When I've reviewed the cases of osteonecrosis of the jaw that have been reported, sometimes these are slight areas of exposed bone where the gum has receded, treated with antibiotics, resolved. So some of these cases may or may not have been very severe. I'm not a dentist.
I think it's very difficult. Yeah, I think I read it was mostly connected with
cancer patients,
and it was the interaction of drugs. So I wasn't really concerned about that, but it does.
Right.
It does stop.
Now, the atrial fib cases, there were about, it was an unexpected finding in the initial reclassed studies. I was part of some of those trials where some of these cases were reported, and of the cases that were reported, many were reported out as much as a month after the infusion. So it's very, very difficult to say whether it was linked with the infusion or not linked with the infusion. Now, without getting into too much technical, couple of issues with infusion. First of all, this medication is now being used with osteoporosis, but it has been used in cancer patients to deal with bringing down calcium levels and other things that they've treated cancer patients with, as it was called Zomita at the time, but it is the same drug. And one thing that's critically important with all osteoporosis drugs is to have enough calcium around. And calcium is an important electrolyte in our system, so we use it for our brain and we use it for our muscles, and our heart is a muscle, and in order for our heart to contract correctly, we have to have enough calcium.
Yeah, but we're talking now about, I'm talking mostly about Fosamax.
Correct.
And these,
sure.
The problem
I'm getting there.
Let me just say.
I am getting there.
Oh,
I'm sorry. But it's taking me a second. It's taking me a second to get there.
Oh, okay.
So as I'm trying to explain, so what happens is that when you take these medicines, calcium goes into bone, leaves bloodstream, goes into bone. So that when you take an infusion, that one thing that we do is, number one, we get some blood work on patients prior to infusing, and we need to know that their calcium level's normal. Now, with the study patients that I was involved with, I did not see anybody ever go from a normal level of calcium to a concerning low level of calcium. I have seen calcium levels drop a bit, but your calcium level will drop a little bit when that calcium goes into bone. So we don't know the mechanism by which heart problem could be an issue. But one thing that we would have to watch clinically, carefully, is that calcium balance, because we know that electrolyte balance, your potassium levels, your calcium levels, your sodium levels, all can affect how your heart functions. And if any medicine throws those levels off, it could in turn throw your heart function off. So there is a what we call in medicine a biologic plausibility, that the medicine could have some action, but there was not a big concern because these cases were so far from the infusion that you would think if it was tagged to something medical that would was happened, it would happen very more quickly. But they're not sure. So, but every single bisphosphonate out there has had some cases of atrial fibrillation, of a faster heartbeat that originates in the atrium, one of the smaller chambers of the heart, tagged with it. But you're right. It is one of the things that we would have to look for. And it is something that we would also head off by making sure that a couple of critical things are fulfilled. One, that the patient has normal blood levels prior to taking medicine. Two, that she takes, or he, it's going to be a he, takes enough calcium after the infusion to keep those levels normal. And that's going to be a very important part to make sure that all the muscles of our body function normally. Because if we allow patients to be infused and allow them their calcium to drop, that's going to be a concern.
Yeah, that was a very thorough answer. But I'm not really talking about reclassing. I'm talking about honesty of the drug companies in reporting late in the game an incidents like these. And now you're talking about reclass when I'm talking about Fosamax. And I just have a distrust of the...
reclassed is if the drug was found.
Hormones were pushed so hard, and there was ignoring of those signs, and finally there was recognition that was not such a great idea.
Well, I'm just saying that it was the reclass studies that brought that showed any issue at all that made us look at it. But there's no way that we'll be able, you have to understand that when we do research studies that they do big studies, but they're not as big as the study, quote unquote, that is done when patients nationwide from a variety of backgrounds and factors now do weigh the risks and benefits and take medication. And actually, there are ongoing systems of reporting. Although I would agree with you, there's definitely issues. I think that they do a pretty good job of getting on top of it when they identify the issues.
Well, have you heard anything about the FDA planning to do this or when they're going to do this?
Well, yes, because I'm involved in those trials now.
Well, you're doing the reclass.
And I'm working on Actonel, and we are looking at it with Actonel as well.
I see. And what do you think of the Fosamax, and have you had problems with that?
I have not seen problems with atrial fib with that. But again, that's why you have to study it in a research setting, because one individual doctor with an occasional patient may or may not be able to realistically spot a trend. That's why you have to do it in a study format.
Yeah, they do say sometimes it's because of advancing age that it may be related to that more than the medication.
Right.
All right, well, thanks. It's a complex issue, and there is, I think I have a valid suspicion about these things. I'm not.
Absolutely.
And I think
absolutely.
It's important to keep
and take your vitamin D and do exercise. And
well, yeah, my vitamin D is fine. All of that is fine. It's all tested. Everything's fine.
Perfect.
Well, good.
Except I'm still suspicious.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Suspicion's good.
Good.
Bye. Well, thanks for calling. Did you get your answer?
Yeah.
Got the answer. Good explanation of it. It is always good to ask questions about what you're putting into your body and what you're taking.
And it's amazing the research that we can access.
Yeah.
And try to interpret. It's fabulous.
And you'll read often. And, you know, I read that that particular piece in AARP, too, and you read a lot of different things in a lot of different magazines and newspapers, and some of it's headlines, some of it's more detailed, some of it's one study, and then there's another study that comes out that may say something else, and that's why it's great to have people like you available who can evaluate this for us and help us sort it all out.
Well, thank you, but I always then remind everyone that it's their own healthcare practitioner that's got to take everything within context of their own case.
Absolutely on point, because they're the only ones who actually know your medical history, your current medical status, and all of the factors involved. You're right. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. It's a regular visit from Dr. Suzanne Truppen talking about women's health issues. And we have a caller on line two from Champaign. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Truppen. My name's Beth, and I'm calling because as I get older, my skin changes, and I find that my hormones change, and I have bumpy skin and breakouts. Is there anything you can do for that?
Well, that is an excellent point, and yes, there are many things that you can do for that. Many of us think of acne as being teenage-related, and we're going to get out of our teen years and get it behind us. But acne is ultimately very hormonal, and any hormonal changes can affect your skin. And as you get on and off birth control, get near to menopause, be pregnant, get off of being pregnant, breastfeed, get off of breastfeeding, anything that is a hormonal change, stress is also a part of it. The type of makeup we wear, you know, we do know now that, for instance, mineral makeup that can't get incorporated into your skin is so much healthier than the typical makeup that we've all worn for so many years. And actually then treating and cleaning your skin properly so that if you want to get the ultimate in skincare, getting your face properly cleansed with a facial would be ideal, but getting microdermabrasion, so you get that dead layer off. And I think Oprah had the Clarisonic brushes that are the medical grade brushes that you can get from places like medical spas. I have a dermatologist, Dr. Tice, who works for me, and we have a skin place that sells these Clarisonic brushes. But those brushes to properly clean your face and debride the dirt off your face properly with a medical grade cleanser probably does more to keep your skin clean and healthy and bump free, and of course eventually getting that consult with a dermatologist and seeing if you need to do something else. But yeah, if you need the quick tip, it's the Clarisonic brush.
Clarisonic brush.
Clarisonic brush.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll have to check that out.
All right. Well, thank you much for the call.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Yep. Holiday gift-giving time is right around the corner.
Absolutely.
My wife is all about dermabrasion. I mean, she's an expert on the topic. She could tell you anything.
Oh, good.
She's probably
I could probably learn from her. I should have her come over to my skin promotion. Have her help us.
Have her display her works. And I have to say, she has great skin. Yeah, not just for her.
Is she an artist?
Well, she is an artist, too.
Yeah, that's what you meant, display her works.
Oh, display her skin works. She can display her artworks and her skin.
I got it.
They're both her canvas, you know, so to speak.
Well, when I started using the medical-grade skin products and cleaning my skin with the Clarisonic brush, people would stop me in the hall and say, what are you doing to your skin? And I've been drying lasers and microderms and chemical peels, and I didn't want to do a facelift. I wanted to do what was non-surgical, and it must work because people literally stop me in the hall and say, wow, your skin looks good. I said, hey, thanks.
Well, it does look good. Well, let's go to our next call. Let's see. Line three in Charleston. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Truppen. I'd like to go back to the question about reclass.
Okay.
I'm a paraplegic, have been for 21 years, and I'm 70 years old.
Okay.
But
70 years young, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do look, I've been told, younger than what I am. The question is about the bone scan, which I just came from, and it looks pretty grim because the hip photo showed a lot more porous porosity than it had before, and the cancellar bone on the leg is a little thinner than it was. It's been steady since, maybe 5 years after I became a para. And I take Evista, I take calcium, and I take vitamin D and a regular vitamin tablet every day. So,
well,
what about this reclassification?
You're definitely,
would I qualify for,
well, you probably, you do need a medical consultation, and
right.
It depends on exactly what's going on. There's a couple of different issues that I didn't talk about, but being a bisphosphonate is probably going to be better for hip bone density than Evista. Evista is a phenomenal drug. It can be anti-breast cancer, and it probably has been giving you a lot of benefit over the years. But bisphosphonates definitely for the non-vertebral sites. I feel their data, especially actually the data on Fosamax, which has been out there the longest, is probably much stronger than the data on Evista. Now, all the bisphosphonates reduce. Okay, in order to have healthy bone, and I have explained this before, we have to have some bone turnover. So bone is, we dig out these little sites of our bone and then we fill them back in. And all the bisphosphonates work by slowing down that digging out phase. There's only one drug on the market, Forteo, a parathyroid hormone that can actually fill in the pits a little bit better, yeah, and actually build bone, and it builds bone fast. And for patients that have gone into accelerated loss, for patients that have been on other formulations for a long time and perhaps need to switch off for a couple of years, for patients that actually have fractures, and you can't always establish fracture unless you either do a vertebral fracture analysis on the bone density table. Not all the machines have that capability. Ours, we can flip the patient to the side and do that for them, or you can get some standard x-rays. But trying to figure out if you actually have fractures established, those kinds of things probably would establish, you know, we're not treating you over the phone here, but you might, in fact, or somebody like you who's been on one medicine for a while might, in fact, be a Forteo candidate.
Are there any contraindications of taking that as far as?
Well, of course, and that would be something that you would have to work out with your own physician, and Forteo is an expensive medicine, and we do use we work with insurance companies to get that funded. So we have to evaluate patients to see if they're candidates, and we work with their insurance company to get that funding for them before getting the patient on the medication.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, okay. Thank you very much.
Good. Well, thank you very much, and good luck with it. And again, talk to your doctor and
absolutely
get the evaluation. We have more calls to take, and 333-9455 is our local number, 800-222-9455. If it's long distance, I'm Jay Pierce, sitting in for David Inch, who's a bit under the weather today. We're talking about women's health with Dr. Suzanne Troopen, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Illinois College of Medicine, and also in practice as an OBGYN at Women's Health at Champaign. And you don't want to give David a tip if he's listening, do you? And he's kind of, I guess he's got the stomach, the bug that's, you know, everybody always says they get the crud that's going around.
Usually 24 hours.
There you go.
He'll be fine.
Tough it out, David.
Hydration, hydration, hydration.
Drink your 7-Up. You'll be good. All right. Pedialyte. That's right. You've got to have something. Keep the electrolytes up because, you know, your body evacuates everything and you've got to replace all of that.
Right.
Not just the water. All right. Let's go to line 4. This is a caller from Pontiac. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I want to talk a little bit about weight loss.
Don't we all?
I'm so frustrated. This year when I went to my doctor, my blood pressure was a little high, and I think my triglycerides were just above where they were supposed to be. So I worked really hard, and I lost almost 20 pounds, lost 4 inches around my waist. And everything, we tested, and everything was great. And it's creeping back on. Honest to God, I just don't know what to do. I can't live like that. I can't live on salad. And, I mean, realistically. So I'm walking 3 miles about 3 times a week. What what can I do to, if I could just lose 20, 25 pounds, you know, I'm not going to be skinny again. I don't care, but I want to be healthy.
Well, of course,
I am older as well.
You know, it's probably impossible to give somebody really good advice in a short answer over the telephone. Couple of different things. The amount of calories that that we burn slowly gets slower. Our metabolism does slow down. So if we exercise the same, eat the same, and age, well, that's going to translate into a little bit of gain. And that's pretty much a true formula. Now, it doesn't have to be in a day or two, but the problem is our energy balance is actually fairly fragile. So that taking in a few extra calories, more than we burn up, instantly translates into lots of extra calories. So figuring out how to burn more calories is one of their strategies, but it can't just be adding exercise. It has to be a faster paced lifestyle. Also, there are certain ways of eating that does help you do that, as well as being very accurate in terms of what you're eating. And there are other people that literally do have to be maintained on what we call the anorexants, the long-term medications that do help people lose. Also, this medicine, Ali, really, it's over-the-counter now. I have to fess up that I haven't tried it, and I keep saying I'm going to try it. But it actually will cause up to one-third of the fat in your food to pass through. So if you have a piece of meat, that's going to have some fat in it. If you have some salad dressing, that's going to have some fat in it. If you have regular bread, that's going to have some fat in it. So it will actually cause some of that fat to pass through, and you will not get those calories. That is something that actually is a medicine that you can actually take, that by taking that versus dieting without taking that, you will lose. Other medications out there, you don't lose any differently. You just stick on your diets better. So there are a few strategies that can be tried. Lots of experimental things. There are medications that they're working with for the very obese I've heard some of the researchers when I've gone to some of our research meetings. I'm not involved in any of these clinical trials, but they say we're going to blow bariatric surgery out of the water, which is good. We don't, you know, have to do surgery is definitely an issue. But there are definitely ways. I feel that patients who go in, see a nutritionist, get any kind of regular visits, weigh-ins, those are the patients that generally do the best as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks.
Well, good for you for that initial effort. What's your favorite thing to eat?
I don't know. Probably ice cream.
Yeah, see,
there we go.
I like all that stuff, and I like to cook. It makes it tough.
It does, doesn't it?
Every food's permittable, just not a whole lot of it.
Well, the trouble is, I really feel like my body has been fighting back. You have only so much willpower. And it's not a matter of, I've really noticed that my body is just saying, eat this stuff. it is not, willpower, you can't do it with willpower alone. You cannot. And you can put yourself on any kind of regimen you want. And I was really good months. I just didn't even look at stuff. But at some point, your body just starts, the cravings are beyond reasonable. I don't know.
There
good
you go.
Luck.
Well, good luck.
Better try to be fast with these next couple of callers.
All right.
Sorry.
Okay, bye.
Thanks
for
the call.
I was a little late.
Well, let's go to line one now in Urbana. You're on the air with Dr. Troopin. Go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Troopin. A few years ago, my bone density indicated osteopenia. But since then, I've been taking the Actimel, exercising, and calcium and all that. So now it seems to be maybe borderline, but it's not osteopenia anyway. But my question concerns the fact that I will be taking an aromatase inhibitor soon, and I understand that they affect the bone loss. And I wondered whether you have any recommendations on an aromatase inhibitor and or a change in medication for bone loss.
Well, yes, they have done a new study that shows that aromatase inhibitors will cause some bone loss. They've not really done enough studies yet to say whether this is significant enough that it would prohibit a medication like Actonel from working. And we also have to remember that medications like Actonel improve the structure of our bone, which also is significant in terms of fracture prevention, so that you do better on medication in terms of fewer fractures than off medication in cases like yours. And whether or not you might have to adjust the amount of calcium you're taking or adjust the amount of vitamin D that you have intake, that's going to be something that you'll probably have to work out with your individual doctor. But there is no general recommendation to either not take your aromatase inhibitor or any specific medicine to switch off to. It's just something that's been, like you say, it's been a news story, and it's something that we'd have to watch.
Mm-hmm. Should the bone density, of course I can talk with my doctor about this too, but bone density tests be taken more often?
Oh, good question. Well, bone density tests, although they're phenomenal tests and we rely on them heavily, they can't be repeated all that often because of their range of accuracy. Okay. So what we do in some of these cases where we suspect that that things aren't working is we use other markers, and there are urinary and blood markers of bone turnover that we can use to see if your medicine needs to be adjusted. So not extra bone density tests, but there are other tests that can be used sometimes clinically.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And let's go to line two in Champaign.
Hi. You know, for the lady who was dieting stuff, one thing I found that helped me was the MyFoodDiary.com, where you list everything you eat.
Yeah, I did that for a while, too.
It's hard to keep up with it, but it really helped me track and just gave me, like, just helped me understand just what I was doing to myself with all the stuff I was getting.
Yes, I belong to MyFoodDiary.com,
yeah.
And I think my first day on there, I went and had my favorite Jimmy John's sandwich, you know, number 13, the darn thing is 1,000 calories,
yeah.
Or something
you
like
never
that.
Think of it.
And I looked at that, I've never been so depressed.
I know.
I'm like a 1,000-calorie sandwich.
So it doesn't help with, you know, the craving piece, because
right.
It does help you at least understand what you're
yeah,
doing.
It depends. If you do a lot of your own cooking, you have to enter all your ingredients, and I think that I always wondered if I did that too accurately, but if you eat out and you go to any, you know, place that all of us can name, the portions are right there where you can read it and weep.
Right. Isn't that sad? But my question had to do with breast health, in the sense that it runs in my family, cancer, that is, breast cancer. And, you know, since I was 35, I'm now 41, I've been doing the mammograms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the thing is that every time I go, and, you know, I've talked to other friends of mine in the same situation, I guess the density, breast density, they just can't see anything. And I don't know how worthwhile the trips really are to do this if, because of my age, for one, it's hard to see anything. So I was wondering, is there anything else out there that can be done?
Excellent, excellent question. And finally, we do have something else.
Yay.
And most patients, okay, here's the good news and bad news.
Like
when you get a pap smear of your cervix and a pelvic exam, we're still going to have to use those mammograms. And right now, the mammogram test is still the best test to find actual cancer.
Okay.
But we now have the Halo breast pap test that actually can be used to identify the precancerous changes in the breast cells. When a mammogram finds a breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
that cancer spot has been in a patient's breast for probably 10 to 12 years.
Wow. Maybe
8 if it's a very just a small speck. But the Halo Breast Pap can identify the precancerous changes in years 1 to 6.
Wow.
And it was just approved this year. It is, you can go online. Neomatrix makes it. I think it's mybreastpap.com, something like that.
Okay.
And read more about it. I did buy the first machine in Illinois. I've been happily surprised that some insurance companies have been covering the test.
Okay.
And it's most useful for patients between about ages 25 to 55. We do use it up to age 70. Ideally, at some point in time where we get enough machines out there, we get enough insurance companies covering it, patients will have this every year, just like their pap smear. What it is it's checking for nipple fluid. So it's called NAF, nipple aspirate fluid. It's basically a medical grade breast pump, and you put it on. It's like a 5-minute test. It feels a little bit different than the mammogram. The average pain level's about 3 out of 10.
Mm.
But I've had patients who say they don't feel it at all, and I've had patients who really complain about the discomfort. So it's definitely a range.
Can it be worse than a mammogram? Because those are pretty painful.
I didn't think so.
Okay.
When I did it, I did breastfeed, and so I had some reference point from that, and
okay.
it felt like a little more direct pressure on my nipple than a mammogram, which feels like more direct pressure
breast,
on
right?
the whole breast.
Yeah.
But so it was a different sort of feeling. And
okay.
once I got started and I felt the amount of pressure, it was like, oh, okay, I get it. And in a normal test is to get no fluid at all. And you're a slightly more high-risk category if you do get fluid. And if we get fluid, we send that off for a pap test. I've had no trouble getting the actual fluid analysis done by insurance companies.
Okay.
Around the country, they're charging in the range of $75 to $125 for the test. And at our office, we charge $95.
Okay.
And like I say, some insurance companies have actually been reimbursing patients for it. 5-minute test. You can then take the results to your own doctor. And
so should this be done before a mammogram? Or
anytime.
Once a year.
And it's really good for women with dense breasts. I feel that it's very important for menopausal women who are still on estrogen. I feel that it's very important for anybody that is in a high-risk category, but it's a screening tool exactly like pap smears.
Okay.
And we were able to reduce the rate of cervical cancer in the United States by well over 70% with the introduction of pap smears.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not been able to crack down that percent of breast cancer
right.
at all. And hopefully with this test, we'll actually be able to reduce the rate of breast cancer.
Okay, so it's just a 5-minute thing.
5-minute thing.
And, okay, and then should still get the mammogram anyway.
Yes.
And now, I've been hearing about a digital.
Well,
is that any
better? A mammogram is an X-ray technology, and those films can be processed with what's called film screen, which is still the industry standard. So, for instance, when I do certain research studies, I have to get film screen because it's the industry standard.
Oh, okay.
But and then or the image can be processed digitally. In our community now, Provena had the first digital, but they have them at Carl and at Christie as well, finally now. So I've been excited about that. And also, we do know that for patients that have very high risk or hereditary, MRIs might actually be more accurate. But
so I should just talk to my doctor about which one to
right.
do.
And for most women out listening out there, it's going to be yearly mammograms. And if we can get those Halo Breast Pap tests out there, that's what patients need.
Okay. Right. Okay, great.
Good.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you much. All right, let's try to squeeze one more call in quickly. We just have a couple of minutes from Champaign, line 3. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I've been taking Boniva I thought it was to reduce my loss of height, but I'm still losing height. I have scoliosis.
Okay. Let me just say a couple of things about height. If you have osteoporosis that's caused you to reduce height, you have what's called compression wedge fractures of your spine that can only be detected by X-rays. Most of our height loss that occurs particularly rapidly is due to compression of the discs, the space between the vertebra, or, like you say, contortions of the spine that are a little bit different. And so if you're getting significant height loss, other studies need to be done, and because Beneva is going to definitely, if you have compression wedge fractures, it's going to reduce your chances of getting future wedge fractures, but it won't necessarily, if you've continued to have height loss and something else is going on.
So what would you recommend?
Probably consulting a specialist maybe a rheumatologist, an endocrinologist, I would say an orthopedic specialist, but perhaps a physician that works with orthopedics, maybe not necessarily the surgeon themselves, to figure out what is going on with your actual spine and your posture.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for the call. Good luck with it. And we're just running out of time here. Thank you much for coming. I think it's going to be January before you're back.
Yes.
You're here every other month. So happy holidays, happy new year.
You too.
You'll get another chance to talk to Dr. Suzanne Troopen in January here on Focus 580. I'm Jay Pierce, been sitting in for David Inge today.